and major tax cheating has a different penalty. As we travel, Robert and I encounter people in countries where it is the norm for people to cheat on their taxes. This doesn't have to happen. With financial education, anyone can pay less tax legally and never have to fear that the tax collector will catch them cheating. Financial illiteracy distorts reality. When people are stressed and anxious because they are financially strapped, they don't always have a clear view of reality. They don't always see the options and opportunities open to them. For example, many believe a big home, flashy car, nice clothes, expensive wines, and bling make them rich. Step by step. As with many things in life, financial education is a process. Financial education improves financial literacy. Financial literacy increases a person's ability to solve financial problems. Solving financial problems makes the person financially smarter. And a financially smarter person is a richer person. Question. Are you saying the more money problems I solve, the richer I become? Answer. Yes. A rich person can usually solve financial problems the poor and middle class cannot. Question. And are you saying that if I avoid solving my money problems, I become poorer? Answer. Yes. And if you do not solve your problems, they pile up like unpaid bills, which leads to bigger problems. Question. Isn't our government doing the same thing? Answer. It is. Question. So how do we change the world? Answer. That's the question, isn't it? My rich dad often said, if you want to change the world, start by changing yourself. Whenever I was complaining and whining about something, he would have me repeat to myself, for things to change, first I must change. What is financial literacy? One of Rich Dad's most important lessons was, how you solve your problems determines the rest of your life. In 1997, Rich Dad, Poor Dad was published. It is a book on financial literacy about 9-year-old boys. Rich Dad's Son, and me. For those who have read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, this will be a review, with a few embellishments. The Financial Statement. Rich Dad used a simple diagram to develop our financial literacy. It is Rich Dad's version of a financial statement. It consists of 4 simple boxes. At the top are 2 boxes stacked vertically, with income in the top box and expenses in the bottom box. Below these 2 boxes are 2 boxes placed side by side, with assets on the left and liabilities on the right. This simple diagram changed the direction of my life. If not for this simple way to visualize and understand income and expenses and assets and liabilities, I might have followed in my poor dad's footsteps and become an employee who worked hard and struggled with money all my life. The financial statement is at the core of financial literacy. That is why Rich Dad often said, "My banker never asks me for my report card. My banker does not care what school I went to or my grade point average. My banker wants to see my financial statement." Your financial statement is your report card after you leave school. Financial literacy, the basics at a young age, gave me a clearer direction for my life. People who cannot read financial statements are financially illiterate. As you know, there are many highly educated people that cannot read financial statements. This is the real financial crisis we face. Pictures, not words. Since Rich Dad's Son and I were only 9 years old when our financial education began, Rich Dad used pictures and very few words. Today, as a grown man, I still prefer using pictures and very few words. Returning to the financial statement diagram boxes, Poor Dad focused on the income box, whereas Rich Dad focused on the assets box. My poor dad worked for job security and a steady paycheck. Rich Dad worked for assets that produced cash flow. Which column are you focused on? Income or assets? Tax Lessons from Tom. The Power of Financial Statements. I can tell a person's financial literacy by looking at which financial statements they use and how they use them. Employees tend to look only at income. On a tax return, employees only have to report their income. Very few of their expenses are deductible. So for employees, those in the E quadrant, their pay stub is their financial statement. Small business owners tend to look at income and expense. This is the income statement. It tells the story of what money they earned and what they spent. On a tax return, small business owners only have to report their income and expenses. They are not required to have a balance sheet. So for small business owners, those in the S quadrant, the profit and loss or income statement is the only financial statement they use. Those in the B and I quadrants use at least two more financial statements. They use a balance sheet, which reports their assets and liabilities, and they use a statement of cash flows, which shows where their cash came from and where it went. On a tax return, big business owners and professional investors are required to show their income statement and their balance sheet. They are expected to show their statement of cash flows to their banker along with their income statement and balance sheet. When we prepare tax returns at my CPA firm, we require all of our business and investment clients, no matter how large or small, to prepare both an income statement and a balance sheet. This way we have much greater assurance that the information they are providing is accurate. Tax collectors feel the same way. A business is 5 times more likely to be audited if they only show their income statement on their tax return than if they also show their balance sheet. 6 important words. There are 6 words at the core of financial literacy. They are 1. Income, 2. Expense, 3. Assets, 4. Liabilities, 5. Cash, 6. Flow. Ask any entrepreneur what the 2 most important words are, and they will say cash flow. Question. Why are cash and flow the 2 most important words? Answer. Because cash and flow determine if something is income, expense, asset, or liability. For example, income is cash flowing in, and expense is cash flowing out. In the real world, this might be a checkbook, income in and expenses out. Question. Is that why you saying balancing a checkbook is not really financial education? Answer. Exactly. Question. Because a checkbook does not include assets and liabilities? Answer. Exactly. My mom and dad balanced their checkbook, but had no idea what assets or liabilities were. That is why they were poor. Every month, they would wonder where their money went. Their money was flowing out via liabilities, such as their house and car, liabilities they were calling assets. Question. So assets and liabilities determine if someone is rich, poor, or middle class? Answer. Yes. The different classes focus on different columns in the financial statement. The poor focus on expenses, the middle class focus on liabilities, and the rich focus on assets. Question. Are you saying the poor are always trying to save money by reducing expenses? Answer. Yes. Question. And the rich focus on assets? Answer. Yes. Question. So why does the middle class focus on liabilities? Answer. Because in most cases, they do not know the difference between assets and liabilities. Question. Is that why your poor dad called his house an asset and rich dad called his house a liability? Answer. Yes. Question. Why was that? Answer. The answer is financial literacy and the other side of the coin, financial illiteracy. The power of words. Here are 2 important definitions, distinctions that Rich Dad made in helping us understand the difference between an asset and a liability. Assets put money in your pocket, whether you work or not. Liabilities take money from your pocket, even if they go up in value. Question. So the direction of cash flowing determines if something is an asset or a liability? Answer. Yes. Question. So a house could be an asset if the house was putting money in your pocket? Answer. You got it. Anything can be an asset or liability, as defined by the direction of cash flow. Most people have money slipping through their fingers because they insist their house or car is an asset. Tax lessons from Tom. Liabilities and cash flow. Another way to describe a financial statement is a statement of financial condition. A person's financial condition is good if their cash inflows exceed their cash outflows. If you had no job to rely on, your cash inflows would be determined solely by your assets, and your cash outflows would be determined solely by your liabilities. So assets can very literally be defined as something that creates cash inflows, and liabilities can be defined as something that creates cash outflows. The difference between your assets and liabilities, or cash inflows and outflows, is called your net worth, or wealth. To review, the six words at the heart of financial literacy are income, expense, asset, liability, and cash flow. Question. Is that why you named your game cash flow, combining the two words into one? Answer. Yes. Because in the real world of money, the ability to control the direction of cash flow is most important. The rich know how to control cash flowing in, and the poor and middle class cannot control cash flowing out. Question. Is that why the world is in financial crisis? Because our leaders are creating liabilities and cash is flowing out? Answer. Yes. And on top of that, our leaders are printing money to cover the cash flowing out. A change of focus. The millionaires next door focus on these two assets, savings and stocks. The biggest problem today is these two assets, savings and stocks, are toxic. Remember that from 1971 to 2000, people who saved money and invested for the long term in the stock market were doing fine. Then, in 2000, the world changed. A financially literate person is able to review the history of the stock market and understand what that tells us about what to expect in the coming years. Question. Why are you scaring me? Answer. That isn't my intention, and I know it may be frightening, but my reason for the work I do in support of financial education is to prepare people for what is coming next. Question. What will happen next? Answer. I don't really know. No one really knows. We have never been here before. On September 7th, 2010, Warren Buffett said, "The one thing I will tell you is the worst investment you can have is cash. Everybody is talking about cash being king and all that sort of thing. Cash is going to become worth less over time." People who followed Buffett's advice, those who got out of cash positions and into the stock market in 2010, did very well. The problem is, as I am writing this book in 2017, the stock market is at all-time highs. The question is, can Warren save them in this crash? Consider again Buffett's performance during the first three crashes of this century. He lost money in the crash, but the markets are climbing again. The question is, can investors, even those as savvy as Warren Buffett, not lose money in the coming crash? Are you financially illiterate? As you consider these actions and reactions, these lessons on financial literacy and illiteracy, think about how you've responded. What have you been thinking and feeling? Here I have summarized how financially illiterate people are likely to respond in the real world if there is another crash. Financial illiteracy immobilizes people. Financial illiteracy destroys self-esteem. Financial illiteracy causes a person to be frustrated and upset. Financially illiterate people create fixed ideas. Financially illiterate people believe they are victims. Financial illiteracy causes blindness. Financial illiteracy causes poverty. Financially illiterate people make poor investors. Financial illiteracy causes poor judgment. Financial illiteracy causes a person to hate life. Financial illiteracy can lead to unethical actions. Question. So what can a financially illiterate person do? Answer. Start getting financially literate. Start by understanding the six basic words of financial literacy. 1. Income. 2. Expense. 3. Asset. 4. Liability. 5. Cash. 6. Flow. Challenge yourself to understand how cash flow determines if something is an asset or a liability. Understand why a house is not an asset. Understand why savers are losers. Understand why your investment portfolio may be a liability, not an asset. Understand why the markets are in turmoil. Understand why the two primary assets of the millionaires next door, savings and stocks, may become liabilities. Understand why it's the money, stupid. If you can understand and explain these principles and ideas, you are on your way to becoming a financial genius. Part 2. Summary. Money is a language. Learning to be rich is much like learning a foreign language. It takes time, practice, and dedication. Poor people speak the same language. They speak the language of poverty. They think in the words of the poor and use those words when they communicate. Their most frequently used words are, "I can't afford it," and "I can't do it." Until those words change, little else will change. As Henry Ford said, "If you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you can't." Either way, you are right. The middle class speaks the same language. The favorite words of the middle class are job security, steady paycheck, and benefits. They avoid the words risk and debt. They think the idea of saving money is smart, and it was until 1971. Until a person's words change, little else will change. The language of the rich is different. The rich, those with financial education, speak different languages. Entrepreneurs speak a different language than employees. Real estate investors speak a different language than stock market investors. A real estate investor will use words like cap rate, and a stock market investor will talk about PE ratio, both meaning almost the same thing. The point is, words become flesh. Got real financial education? Part 2 has been about what financial education is not. What is financial illiteracy? Part 3 will focus on what is real financial education. The good news is that real financial education begins with words, the real language of money, the language of the rich. And the best news of all, words do become flesh, and words are free. Part 3. What is real financial education? Introduction to Part 3. Debt and taxes. I bet a lot of people would agree with me if I said that the two nastiest words in the world's financial vocabulary are debt and taxes. Debt and taxes are the real reason for the growing gap between the rich and everyone else. That is why 1913 is a critical year in world history. In 1913, the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank was created. It was also the year the 16th Amendment was ratified, the action that led to the creation of the Internal Revenue Service, the dreaded and often feared U.S. Tax Department. These two institutions needed to coexist before what Dr. Fuller called grunge, the gross universal cash heist, could take place. Today, debt and taxes are like a cancer, eating away at the heart and soul of the poor and middle class. The U.S. national debt is a disaster waiting to happen. Yet, on the other side of the coin, debt and taxes continue to make the rich richer. Real financial education is not about which stocks, bonds, ETFs, or mutual funds to buy. Real financial education is not about diversification. As Warren Buffett states, "Diversification is protection against ignorance. It makes little sense if you know what you are doing. How can a person know what they are doing if they know so little about debt and taxes? Whenever I say, I make millions and pay very little taxes, legally, most people's hearts go into cardiac arrest and their minds slam shut. I doubt there are many people more feared than the tax man. Few things are more painful than a government tax audit. Yet it does not have to be that way, if, as Buffett states, you know what you are doing. Having Tom Wheelwright as my mentor, teacher, and tax advisor gives me tremendous confidence to do what I do daily as an entrepreneur and professional investor. Before I do anything that could cross the line, I check in with Tom. Life is so much easier if you follow the rules, especially the tax rules and laws. As Tom always says, the tax rules are primarily incentives, government guidelines on how to be a partner with the government, doing what the government wants and needs done. That is why tax laws throughout the world favor entrepreneurs and big businesses. Simply put, the tax code punishes those in the E and S quadrants. The tax code rewards those in the B and I quadrants. This is why real financial education must start with debt and taxes. Real financial education must look at the other side of the coin of debt and taxes. Real financial education must teach the student how debt and taxes make the rich richer. Real financial education must also teach the student how debt and taxes can make them richer too. And this is why I asked my personal tax advisor, Tom Wheelwright, to be my adjuvant for this book. Debt and taxes are the heartbeat of real financial education. Tax lessons from Tom. The real purpose of tax law. While tax laws do raise revenue for the government, they also serve a very important purpose in encouraging people to follow government policy. Governments around the world want businesses to hire more people and investors to create more housing, energy, and food. That's why there are so many tax incentives in the B and I quadrants. Chapter 9. Why the Rich Play Monopoly. Poor Dad. Get a job. Rich Dad. Don't work for money. Over the years, I have attended many seminars, conferences, and lectures on money. The speakers have had one thing in common. They made things complex, confusing, and frustrating. Many of them seemed to speak a foreign language. I suspected many used financial jargon, not to communicate effectively, but to feel superior. They wanted to prove they were smarter than we were. Real financial education does not have to be complex or confusing. I think of the words often attributed to Albert Einstein. If you can't explain it to a 6-year-old, you don't understand it yourself. Real financial education can be very simple as playing Monopoly. 3 incomes. When you advise a young person, go to school, get a job, work hard, save money, and invest for the long term in a 401k, what is missing is a little financial education on taxes. The person who advises a young person to follow the go to school and get a job formula for success should also add, and you will pay the highest percentages in taxes. If the young person knew that tiny bit of information, they might ask, how do I pay lower percentages in taxes? That question would lead a person to ask other questions like, what is real financial education? That question, and ones like it, would lead a person to stand on the edge of the coin, a vantage point from which they could see both sides. He or she could look at the side of the coin where the rich live, the side of the coin that does not work for money. Real financial education on taxes does not have to be complex. The subject of money begins with income, the type of income a person works for. There are 3 types of income. 1. Ordinary income. 2. Portfolio income. 3. Passive income. Ordinary income is the highest taxed of the 3 incomes. When you advise or encourage a person to get a job, that person starts thinking like an employee and working for ordinary income. When a person says go back to school and take your career to the next level, that too means eventually working for ordinary income. When a person advises someone to save money, that too makes a statement on taxes. The interest from savings is taxed as ordinary income. When someone advises save for retirement in a 401k, the long-term ramifications of this is that the income from a 401k is ordinary income. Tax lessons from Tom. Ordinary income is the worst income. Portfolio income and passive income are taxed at special rates and have special tax benefits. The government prefers portfolio and passive income, so it provides an incentive to earn income that is portfolio or passive. All other income is ordinary. The government chooses not to give a tax incentive for people to work or save money. The tax incentive for setting money aside for retirement, such as in a 401k in the United States or RRSP in Canada, is the ability to defer the tax on the income until it is pulled out. In addition to taxing the 401k at ordinary tax rates, the tax law penalizes someone who pulls it out before retirement age. So not only is it taxed at the highest rate, you have to leave it in until you retire or pay both a high tax rate and a penalty. Question. So going to school, getting a job, saving money, and investing for the long term in certain government-sponsored retirement plans is working for ordinary income? Answer. Yes. Question. And when a person becomes an entrepreneur and moves from employee in the E quadrant to entrepreneur in the S quadrant, the entrepreneurs in the S quadrant pay an even higher percentage of income in taxes? Answer. Yes. Question. Why is that? Answer. The simple and short answer is because they work for money. Remember, Rich Dad's lesson number one from Rich Dad, Poor Dad is the rich don't work for money. Also remember that after 1971, all money became debt. Why work for money when more and more money is being printed? Why get out of debt when money is debt? Keep in mind that it all comes down to one thing. It's the money, stupid. Schools teach students to work for money. That is the primary reason why the gap between the rich and the poor and middle class grows. Giving people more money will not help. More entitlement programs only make the poor and middle class poorer because entitlement programs are paid for with taxes. Taxes paid by the poor and middle class. The people that work for money. Question. Is that fair? Answer. There's that F word again. Who said anything about fair? I didn't say it was fair. If life was fair, I would look like Brad Pitt. What is not fair is the lack of real financial education in schools. Without real financial education, billions of people are in financial crisis. Schools teach students to work for ordinary income, period. That is where the problem begins. Income of the rich. The rich work for portfolio income and passive income. Portfolio income is also called capital gains. A capital gain occurs when you buy low and sell high. For example, you buy a share of stock for $10 and you sell for $16. You have a capital gain of $6 per share. The $6 is portfolio income. The same is true when you buy real estate in a crash and then wait until it increases in value before selling it. Buying and selling real estate for a gain is the same thing. You buy low and sell high. Technically, ordinary income occurs when you work for money, and technically, portfolio income occurs anytime you buy low and sell high. When your money works for you, instead of you working hard for money. Portfolio income is taxed at 20% in the United States. Tax lessons from Tom. Portfolio income around the world. It's not just the United States that favors investment. Most countries have a lower tax rate for portfolio income than for ordinary income. Most governments want their citizens to invest, so they give them an incentive to invest. Special tax rates for portfolio income. Passive income is cash flowing from an asset. Your asset is producing money. In real estate, passive income is called rental income. For example, if I buy a rental property for $100,000 and my net monthly rental income is $1,000 a month, the $1,000 is passive income. Passive income from real estate is the lowest taxed income, sometimes at 0%. As you can tell, this is where things can begin to get confusing. There are many different words saying basically the same things. Real estate guys say it one way, stock guys say the same thing differently, and bond guys speak another foreign language. So to keep things simple, I just remember there are three types of income: ordinary, portfolio, and passive. If I am at a conference and the speaker is speaking a foreign language, I simply raise a hand and ask, is that ordinary income, portfolio income, or passive income? If the speaker does not know the differences between the three types of income, that person does not know what they are talking about. As I've quoted earlier in this chapter, if you can't explain it to a 6-year-old, you don't understand it yourself. Question. So real financial education must include knowing the differences between the three types of income? Answer, yes. That is where the gap between rich, poor, and middle class begins. It begins with what type of income they work for. Playing Monopoly. Rich Dad used the game of Monopoly as a teaching tool. The board game was his classroom. He was teaching us to not work for money, for ordinary income. He was teaching us to work for portfolio and passive income. For example, if I had one greenhouse and the rental income from that house was $10, that $10 was passive income, the lowest taxed of the three incomes. Question. So at a young age, you knew the difference between the three different types of income? Answer. I did. As the introduction to part 3 of this book states, real financial education must teach the student about debt and taxes. Most importantly, how debt and taxes can make them richer. Playing Monopoly laid the foundation for understanding how debt and taxes could make me richer by understanding the three types of income. After playing Monopoly, Rich Dad would take us to see his real greenhouses, his rental properties. He used words like rental income and cash flow. He would always tell us, someday these greenhouses will be a red hotel. After looking at Rich Dad's greenhouses, I would go home and my poor dad would ask, have you done your homework? If you don't get good grades, you won't go to a good school and you won't get a good job. Question. So one dad was advising you to work for ordinary income and the other for portfolio and passive income? Answer, yes. Obviously, being a 9-year-old kid, I did not yet understand the three types of income, or debt and taxes, but Rich Dad was laying the foundation for my future. I was on the other side of the coin, and I could see my future. I could see that my journey to the other side of the coin would be my learning to play Monopoly in real life. Big Red Hotels. 10 years later, when I was 19, I returned home to Hawaii from school in New York for the grand opening of Rich Dad's Red Hotel, right smack in the middle of Waikiki Beach. It was on one of the most prestigious pieces of real estate in Hawaii and the world. Today, my wife Kim and I own a Big Red Hotel in Arizona with hundreds of employees on a property that includes 5 golf courses. All we did was play Monopoly in real life. Kim and I did not get rich working for ordinary income. We worked for portfolio and passive income. Question. Is that why you and your wife developed your game Cash Flow, to teach people how to understand investing? Answer. Yes. Kim and I were financially free by 1996. Kim was 37 and I was 47. It took 10 years. As a young married couple, we had started with nothing. We achieved financial freedom without jobs, without saving money, and without a 401k. When people asked us how we achieved financial freedom, we could not explain exactly how we did it. We even tried playing Monopoly with people in an attempt to explain the process we used. That led us to develop the Cash Flow game, launching the commercial version in 1996. Rich Dad, Poor Dad was self-published in 1997, more as a brochure to explain the cash flow game than as a book. It was a brochure I wrote to sell the game. As you know by now, every publisher we approached turned the book down. Question. The publishers you contacted could not see the other side of the coin? Answer. That's what we assumed. They seemed to have difficulty understanding why the rich do not work for money, why savers are losers, and why your house is not an asset. Most of the publishers were employees who worked for money, ordinary income. My book and the cash flow game teach people about portfolio income and especially passive income. Question. The publishers may not have understood the message in your book, but Oprah Winfrey must have. Is that why she invited you on her show in 2000? Answer. Oprah is one of the richest women in the world. She understood the story of Rich Dad and Poor Dad. Her life started on the poor side of the coin and moved to the rich side. Today she definitely lives on the other side of the coin. Oprah does not need a job. Why the stock market bubble? Earlier in this book, I cited financialization as one reason why the rich get richer. The financialization industry brought us this financial crisis by building weapons of mass financial destruction, a mysterious product known as derivatives. The financialization industry keeps the world economy in a bubble, pumping in trillions in debt and keeping interest rates below zero in the hope that the financial crash does not arrive. Financialization affects corporate executives' pay. According to the Economic Policy Institute, CEO pay has grown exponentially since 1970. Since 1970, CEO pay has risen almost 1,000%. Employees' pay has risen roughly 11% during that same period of time. Corporate executives do not work for money. In the corporate world, a large part of an executive's compensation is in stock options rather than a paycheck. The top executives do not want large paychecks. They do not want ordinary income. Let's say the CEO has an option to buy his company's stock at $10 a share. The CEO does a great job, and the stock price goes up to $16. The CEO then exercises the option to buy the stock at $10 a share and often sells the shares immediately for $16, netting $6 per share in profit. If he or she has 1 million shares, the capital gains are $6 million. Capital gains taxes on $6 million in portfolio income is a lot less than ordinary income taxes on $6 million in salary. If the CEO had received $6 million as ordinary income, a paycheck, he or she would have paid approximately 45% in federal and state taxes. $6 million at 45% equals $2.7 million in taxes. Choosing to take $6 million as long-term capital gains or portfolio income, he or she would have paid approximately 25% in federal and state taxes. $6 million at 25% equals $1.5 million in taxes. Employees of the same company work for ordinary income while the executives work for portfolio income. Yet another reason why the rich are getting richer. If an executive is confident that he or she can get the employees to work hard and increase the stock price of the company, the executive may take $1 in salary, ordinary income, and the rest in stock options or portfolio income. Lee Iacocca did this as CEO of Chrysler, and so did Steve Jobs at Apple. Again, the rich do not work for money, and one reason is taxes. Bubble vision. After the 2008 crash, U.S. businesses were struggling to grow. If the business did not grow and share prices did not go up, CEOs and executives would not make a lot of money. This is when massive financialization took off. With interest rates at all-time lows, CEOs began borrowing money, using the company's good credit with banks to buy the company's stock. It was called share buyback. What share buyback means is that the CEO and his or her staff cannot grow the business. So rather than borrow money to invest in R&D, research and development, and creating new products and markets, which would make the company stronger, the CEO borrows money and invests in the stock market, buying back the company shares and pushing the share price of the company up. The CEO then sells his shares, earning portfolio income instead of ordinary income. Most mom and pops, the millionaire next door investors, think share buybacks are wonderful. Their retirement portfolio goes up as the share prices go up. They believe the company is stronger. They believe the CEO has done a great job growing the business. The problem is that in most cases the company is left weakened, uncompetitive, without new products or vision for the future, and deeply in debt. The executives then exit the company floating on golden parachutes with bags filled with portfolio income. The employees are left on a sinking, debt-laden ship, still working for ordinary income, saving money to earn interest, which is also ordinary income, and investing in a 401k retirement plan, also for ordinary income. Without real financial education, how would an employee know why working, saving, and investing for ordinary income is not the best idea? How would an employee know why the gap between the rich and themselves keeps growing? Time to strike. After a while, the workers know something is wrong. They smell a rat. Their wages are not rising. Union leaders call for a strike, demanding higher wages. The workers win. They earn more ordinary income. Higher wages make the company weaker. The company becomes a takeover target. The existing board of directors, the same people who made millions in portfolio income, agrees it is time for a change. They have made enough money, so they sell to a new owner. Once the company is sold, the new owners clean house. Very often, one of the first things they do is fire employees. Laid-off workers go back to school, many taking on student loans, the worst type of debt known to man, hoping to find a new job, working again for ordinary income. And the gap between rich and everyone grows wider. Rather than going to union meetings demanding more ordinary income or going back to school for more ordinary income, the employees should have played Monopoly at lunchtime. They could have learned why the rent from a green house was better than a paycheck. Tax lessons from Tom. Education taxes. When someone goes back to school to get a job, the cost of the education is not deductible. This is because they are getting an entire new profession. If they go to seminars for financial education to improve their investing, however, the education can be deductible as an improvement in their business and investing skills. Chapter 10. Phantom Income. Income of the Rich. Poor Dad. I need my paycheck. Rich Dad. I don't need a paycheck. Describing phantom income is like attempting to describe a ghost in a room. This is a very important chapter, and I have done my best to keep it simple. Phantom income is the income of the very rich. It is income that very few people are aware of. Here is my suggestion. If you find this chapter confusing, partner with a friend, someone who likes math. Listen to this chapter on your own and then discuss the chapter together. If the concept of phantom income is still not clear, talk to an accountant and do your best to understand this very important subject. Without real financial education, most people are blind to phantom income. This chapter is very important because phantom income is the income of the rich. A higher level of financial intelligence. When I returned from Vietnam in 1973, Rich Dad suggested I begin my financial education by taking classes on real estate investing. "Get my real estate license?" I asked. Rich Dad laughed and said, "No, real estate licenses are for people in the S quadrant. You want financial education for the I quadrant." Real estate agents work for ordinary income, and real estate investors work for portfolio and passive income. There is nothing wrong with having a real estate license, but most real estate brokers are not real estate investors. As Rich Dad often said, the reason they are called brokers is because they are broker than you. At the time, I was still flying for the Marine Corps. One night after a night mission, I returned home to my condo in Waikiki. It was late, and I turned on the TV and caught an infomercial on real estate investing. The promoter promised to teach me how to buy real estate for no money down. Since Marine Corps pilots did not make much money, the idea of buying real estate in Hawaii, some of the most expensive real estate in the world, for no money down, interested me. I called the number on the TV screen and made a reservation for the initial free seminar. At the free seminar, I saw many people just like me, people looking for a different path in life, people who were tired of their 9-to-5 jobs. The seminar that was being promoted was 3 days long and cost $385, a fortune at the time, and nearly half of my salary as a Marine Corps pilot. When I asked Rich Dad if he thought my going to a seminar a good thing or a bad thing, he smiled and said, "How would I know? I have not done the course. There is only one way to find out. You just do it. You will always learn something. Doing something is better than what most people do, which is nothing." Academic man versus seminar man. This was another difference between Rich Dad and Poor Dad. Poor Dad was an academic man. He believed in traditional education. If a brand name university did not present the course, it was not real education. If the instructor did not have PhD after their name, the instructor was not a real teacher. Rich Dad was a seminar man. He especially loved Dale Carnegie courses. To him, they were practical, useful, and a relatively inexpensive investment in terms of both money and time. Rich Dad was not concerned with the teacher's credentials. He was more concerned about the teacher's charisma. If the instructor was boring, he was certain the Carnegie Company wouldn't tolerate it. They'd fire the instructor, so he was pretty sure that the instructors would hold his attention and teach him a few things. Poor Dad was especially concerned about degrees and titles. He loved moving from high school valedictorian to Bachelor of Arts degree to Master's degree to PhD. Titles and degrees are important in the world of the E and S quadrants. Rich Dad was only concerned about achieving success in the B and I quadrants. Warren Buffett, seminar man. Even Warren Buffett attends seminars. I heard that he once said, "I do not display a college degree on my office wall. I do proudly display my certificate from my Dale Carnegie public speaking course. I had to learn how to keep my hands and feet from shaking whenever I spoke at shareholders' meetings." Warren hosts one of the most popular seminars in the world, the Berkshire Hathaway Annual Investor Conference. It is called Woodstock for Capitalists. Real teacher. The 3-day real estate seminar was fantastic. My instructor was a real estate investor. He was rich, he was financially free, and he was happy. Everything I wanted to be. The course was practical, no BS. The instructor used real-life examples, not textbook theory. He spoke of his wins and his losses, and like Rich Dad, he emphasized the importance of mistakes, that mistakes were priceless taps on the shoulder, telling you, "Wake up, you don't know everything. Here's something you need to learn." He spoke of the importance of having good partners and the painful lessons from bad partners, especially dishonest ones. He spoke of the value of trust, honor, and humility, of treating everyone you worked with kindness and respect. To him, thinking you were smarter or better than the next person was a sin, a crime against your fellow human. At the end of the 3 days, I discovered that being a real estate investor was not about making money. Being a real estate investor was about being an entrepreneur in residential real estate, providing safe, affordable housing for people. If you did a good job, you made a lot of money. If you did a good job, the banks would lend you more money. And if you did a good job, the government gave you tax breaks. You were a partner with the government, doing what the government wanted done. Being a real real estate investor was not about flipping property for capital gains. People who flip houses are property traders, a different class of property investor. People who flip property tend to make housing more expensive. They want prices to go up, so flippers pay a higher tax rate. Most stock market investors are like real estate flippers. They do not really want the asset. They just want the price of the asset to go up. As soon as there is enough of a capital gain, they sell, often selling in a matter of days or even hours. That is how they make money. That is why taxes on capital gains, especially gains from flipping stocks, are higher than taxes for passive investors, especially real estate investors who invest for cash flow. Traders believe in the greater fool theory of investing. A trader buys, then waits for a fool greater than they are, someone willing to pay a higher price than they paid. Traditionally, a trader does not add any value to the asset. A few real estate flippers do fix up the property, then flip it. Flipping a property or a stock is working for income. Stock and property flippers pay a higher tax rate than real estate investors. Tax lessons from Tom. Flipping creates ordinary income. Flipping requires the personal efforts of the investor, so flipping is taxed as ordinary income, and flippers pay the same tax rates as anybody else in the S quadrant. Market crashes. Flippers or traders do well as long as the greater fool shows up. When fools stop buying, markets start crashing. That is what happened in 2000, 2007, and 2008. Crashes occur when fools stop being foolish. Cash flow investors wait for market crashes. Fools run and hide, and the real investor comes out of hibernation looking for bargains. Phantom cash flow. The instructor at the 3-day seminar went far beyond how to find and buy property for nothing down. Like Rich Dad, he spoke about phantom cash flow, the invisible income. He taught, phantom cash flow is the real income of the rich. Phantom income is the income the poor and middle class cannot see. In other words, he was saying phantom cash flow is not ordinary, portfolio, or passive income, income you can see. Phantom cash flow is invisible to people without financial education. Phantom cash flow is invisible income, a derivative of debt and taxes. Question. Debt and taxes produce phantom cash flow? Answer. Yes. That is why real financial education is centered around debt and taxes. Always remember this. Real financial education is about debt, taxes, and phantom cash flow, the invisible income of the rich. The remainder of this chapter is about how you can see the invisible, the ghosts in the room, phantom income. Please note, all the examples I offer are extremely simple, for instructional purposes only. For those who want greater detail, I will list 7 books that I believe are essential for those who want to live their lives in the I quadrant. Debt is phantom cash flow. When people put money down, a deposit, on a house, they generally use after-tax dollars. For example, let's say a $100,000 property requires a 20% down payment. That means the property buyer must come up with $20,000. If the investor is in the 40% income tax bracket, that $20,000 really cost the investor approximately $35,000 in ordinary income or paycheck money. Approximately $15,000 went to the government in taxes. Borrow the money. The question is, what if the investor borrowed the $20,000 rather than used his or her own after-tax paycheck money? The answer is the investor saved $15,000. The $15,000 is phantom income, money the investor did not have to work for, did not pay taxes on, and did not have to save. Question. So by using debt, the investor is ahead of the game by $15,000? Isn't that like giving a runner a head start in the race? Answer. It is. While mom and pop are saving after-tax dollars for a down payment, the professional investor who knows how to use debt as money is way down the road. The professional investor is on to the next investment before mom and pop leave the house. Question. Just because the professional investor uses debt and the amateur uses after-tax savings. Answer. You're getting it. Think about it. Think about how much time and money you would save if you did not have to work, pay taxes, and live frugally just to save the $20,000 down payment. Question. You mean just borrow the $20,000? Answer, yes. Think about this. $20,000 is not a lot of money for many people. Yet what happens when you need $200,000 or $2 million or $20 million for a down payment? Question. I could not afford the down payment, so the rich get richer because they know how to borrow the money for larger down payments on properties? Answer, yes. If you are a working person in the E quadrant and you are trying to work and save your way to riches, it is difficult to play the game in the I quadrant. The I quadrant is about debt, taxes, and phantom income. Without real financial education, people in the E quadrant cannot see what is really happening in the I quadrant. That is why stocks, bonds, and mutual funds are best for those in the E and S quadrants. You do not need down payments for paper assets. Most people just pay cash. Question. So debt is the key in the I quadrant? Answer. Yes. And taxes and phantom income. Remember that debt is tax-free. You save a lot of time and money renting money rather than working for it. Question. But that takes a lot of skill, doesn't it? Answer. It does. And that's where financial education comes in. I'll repeat Donald Trump's words. You know, I am the king of debt, and I love debt, but debt is tricky and it is dangerous. Question. So that is why Rich Dad suggested you take a real estate course before becoming a real estate investor? Because real estate is about debt, taxes, and phantom income? Answer, yes. Question, why didn't he teach you himself? Answer, he said he had taken me as far as he could. It was time for me to seek better teachers. That is what he did. He was constantly flying to seminars in different cities, seeking new teachers. Rich Dad often reminded me of the three wise men following a star in the heavens. Although they were already rich and wise, they never stopped seeking new and wiser teachers. Sophisticated investor. As stated earlier and as a review, there are six basic words of financial education. These are the words of a financial statement: income, expense, asset, liability, cash, flow. Remember that your banker does not ask you for your report card. Your banker wants to see your financial statement. And sadly, most people do not have one. Next, let's review the three types of income: ordinary, portfolio, and passive. The percentages are approximate and for emphasis and illustration purposes only. Ordinary, 40%. Portfolio, 20%. Passive, 0%. The poor and middle class, in most cases, have only ordinary income, the highest taxed of the three incomes. Savings and 401k income are also taxed as ordinary income. The millionaire next door works for ordinary and portfolio income. The sophisticated investor works for phantom income. Phantom income requires a much higher level of real financial education and literacy because phantom income is invisible income. The following are examples of phantom income. Debt is tax-free money. The phantom income from debt is the time and money you save renting money rather than working to earn it, paying taxes on it, and saving it. The example used earlier explained how a $20,000 down payment really costs $35,000 in ordinary income. The $15,000 difference is phantom income, money and time saved. You can get richer faster if you know how to use debt as money. Appreciation is phantom income. Appreciation occurs when the price of a property goes up. For example, a $100,000 property increases in value to $150,000. The $50,000 is phantom income known as appreciation. The problem is that most people have to sell